This is A View from the Bridge, official podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today is Wednesday, the 23rd of November, 2016. And my name is Patrick Smith. I am back. I am in working order. And I'm ready to go in what is a rammed show. We have quite a bit of discussion about various things. And as usual, a bit of talk about DOPS and refereeing. We hear from Derek Walser. We hear about Quinnipiac University, thanks to Rhonda McClure from the Pink Puck, and television theatre coach Russell's back on A View from the Bridge with the game against the Manchester Storm just around the corner. So let's not wait about. I'll just give you a few of the bits and pieces. At AVFTB on Twitter, of course, is where you get in touch with us for the TFAs. We've got some great ones coming up this week. SoundCloud.com/AVFTB for all of your interviews. We'll try to get as much of them up. I want to stick up the recent one from Sizz on Giants TV. We'll get that up there when he talked to Aaron Murphy. That's an excellent one. But get on to SoundCloud for all of our recent interviews. Get the emails. Keep them coming. podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com. And our website, of course, is www.kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast. The Beat Machine came out a few times this week, so let's get cracking. Right, well, the voice is back in working order, so I can do this job again. Thanks to Mark Hitchcock last week for stepping in at very short notice. Thanks to Sizz as well for all his love of Joey Sides. And also, I just want to... I don't do this at all, which is a bit ridiculous, to be honest with you, but I just want to thank everybody who gets in touch with Review Through the Bridge, who has downloaded the show, who has tweeted the show, who has emailed, chatted to us, interacted to us, commented on Facebook or whatever. Generally just been part of what we do on A View from the Bridge. I'm feeling very thankful today because this is just a podcast. You know, it's just, and without people listening, without people interacting, it would just be three lads sitting in their spare rooms talking to each other. And I felt like over the last whatever number of years, it's become a hell of a lot more, and it's down to the fact that you people out there download and listen to what we have to say, and God bless you for it. Yeah, I don't know why that just came out. I just wanted to, something I really wanted to say. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Mr. David McGimsey.
Good evening, Paddy. It's really lovely to hear you. You're back again. I did was talking to you last week. You're a bit crookier. I'm glad you pulled through. That man flu is no joke.
Oh, I tell you, it's a killer. An absolute killer, mate. I was wiped out. And also back with us, Mr. Aaron Kernan. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Delighted not to have to listen to Hitchy this week for several reasons.
Listen, considering the news that's just come out in the last couple of hours, I'm glad we don't have to talk to Hitchy, but I'm getting enough WhatsApp messages of moaning, and I think some people can see him on Twitter. But we'll get to that in a short while. We're going to fire ahead here because between games this weekend, games last weekend, the NCAA, plus all the stuff in between, there's a hell of a lot to get on with. So let's start with the game in Dundee last Saturday night. A win in a shootout for the Belfast Giants 4-3. The Giants goals coming from Rutherford, Higgins and Walser on the power play. And for the Stars, well, Sizz will be happy. Joey Sides with two goals and Farina with a shorthanded goal. Say shorthanded goal, the Giants, the penalty had just come to an end, and Farina levels it up at 3-3. The shootout went seven rounds, but it was a Keel Tanaka miss, and then Higgins scores the winner. The referee was Neil Wilson. We'll get on to him in a minute. Aaron, it was an odd game, and the Giants did run into quite a bit of penalty trouble.
Yeah, I mean, the Giants absolutely flew out of the traps. Over the course of the season, I think we've talked about slow starts and fast starts quite a lot, and this was the absolute example of the perfect fast start, a goal after 50-odd seconds to get one up, and you sort of hoped that the team would go on from there, but it ebbed and flowed. I mean, Dundee are a good side this year. They've shown that with some of the results they've put together. And, you know, they fought back into the game, they got ahead, and then the Giants pulled back ahead again. And, you know, it was an interesting game, and the penalty trouble Well, we'll maybe talk about some of the refereeing in a minute, but it's something that's come up a few times over the course of the season, and it is, you know, it's definitely costing us at this stage.
Like you say, Rutherford with a goal after 57 seconds really set the Giants on their way. And it should have been two, Davy.
Maybe.
Oh.
It's very, very hard to say, Paddy. You know, even this is the one for, you know, where's the goal line technology when it's coming? Because this is something that, you know, this is a regulation win, perhaps, that could cost you at the end of the season with it just being an overtime win. The shots obviously came in from the point, I think it's Shields, yeah. And it's hit the butt end of the goalie stick, went up, and either hit post bar and out or back bar and out. It's just impossible to tell, even from the GoPro. You really need an overhead. You need goal line technology in that position. The ref, to be fair, is very, very well positioned. There's no ding. That's the, you know, that's the one to me.
Yeah.
A slap shot from 60 feet, traveling at 90 mile an hour, generally would make a big ding when it hits the post. You know, there's no real noise there. And for me, that's an indicator that's possibly hit the back padding and came out. Just the angle, even that it's came out at, to say it's hit the butt end of the stick, going up, hit the upright, hit the bar, if you like. But it's came out 2 or 3 feet from the line, which says to me it can't really have hit bar and post because it would have came down closer to the line. But it's just impossible to tell from the replays and the GoPros and stuff that they've put online there. So if it's impossible to tell with 3 or 4 replays, it's hard to say too much about the referee. But the Giants, in that instance, were absolutely convinced, which is almost more of an indication. You know, Shields stops, puts his hands up in the air, Walser and all, they're all, you know, semi-celebrating, then they have to get back into it. And we don't touch the puck again until it's in the back of our net. You know, that's a big concentration loss on our behalf. We let that affect us badly there for whatever it was, 30, 40 seconds. We just couldn't get the puck back. And we've gave up quite a soft goal again. Once again, no net front coverage. And Joey Sides, as Sis called it, you know, the sideshow last week, Joey Sides has came up with their 2 goals on the night, and he's had a very, very good game for them.
That I say disallowed goal wasn't disallowed, it was just not given. That began the ire in Derek Welser that was apparent all the way to the end of the game. But it seemed to be a bit of a chippy game as well. In the second period, you have an incident involving Mike Quinnell where he one-punches Switzer and down he goes, Davey.
Yeah, Paddy, it all came about from the incident where, you know, Quinnell bores him to a certain extent. He turns at the very last second. It's an accidental bore. You know, Quinnell's got his hands up straight away going, oops, sorry here. And he jumps up, gets engaged and one punches him, puts him down with the one punch. Interestingly, only takes the penalty for the boarding call, 2 minutes for boarding, nothing for the absolute haymaker of a right hand that puts him to the ice. But yeah, the game got a bit chippy, and the referee and inconsistency we talk about there got under our skin a lot more than it got under Dundee's. You know, I think we had about 10 minor penalties through the game, and especially towards the end, that one that Rudy takes for slashing, he gets a bit of a cross check from behind. That's a selfish penalty to take that slash when you're on your knees, when you're 3-2 up with minutes left in the game. You know what? Sorry. It's a very, very selfish play to have that big slash and expect to get away with it. Yes, there's frustration from Rudy there when he gets up because he's the only one that takes the penalty in that. And then he runs his mouth, obviously, and gets thrown out of the game. And all those 10-minute misconducts, I think Aaron touched on it there the other week, they're kept in your record. They go against you whenever Dobbs is looking at your record, how many misconducts and things you're going to hit. You've got to be more disciplined. We've been talking about discipline for a couple of seasons now. Boys have to be more disciplined, and that is a selfish play.
Aaron, looking at the Giants goals, Higgins gets a tip, Martinelli for the second, and then the Giants go up again with another Walser bomb for the third.
Yeah, he's certainly taken it on himself the last few weeks to lead from the front. You know, we talked about it wasn't a hat-trick, the announced hat-trick, but the 2 goals he got against Cardiff, I think it was, wasn't it, a couple of weeks back. And another one this weekend. So, you know, it's good to see a bit of production from the back end there. Martinelli chipping in as well. You know, especially as some of the forwards maybe haven't picked up the number of points we would have expected. So it's good to see other guys contributing in ways that maybe we weren't expecting from them.
Let's bring it to the referee. And Davey, you touched on it there in regards to the calls on Rutherford, the calls on Quinnell and the likes. Referee Neil Wilson didn't have the greatest of games, let's be fair.
No, but sometimes, you know, you need help from your linos, and we'll go again to the potential of a 4-man system.
Yeah.
You know, Where Neil Wilson is, and we'll look at that tweet we put up earlier on, you know, with a bit of a tongue-in-cheek sniper, you know, video. At the end of the day, where Neil Wilson is, and he's looking down the ice, he's looking through bodies, players are skating backwards, and one's gone over, and he's had a guess. That looks like a trip. And he's gone with it, and he's stuck rigidly to it. I think the lino says to him, you know, don't think so. And to be fair to Wilson, you know, he's came back on Twitter there today and held his hands up and get, yeah, what? But, you know, that's too late. There's the opportunity, if you've got four officials on the ice, that the other official sees that much clearer because he's in that end of the ice. And yes, there was some really strange, touched on earlier there, Quinnell, you know, can throw a huge right hand, knock on someone their feet and not take any penalty for it at all. The player that jumps up and engages Quinnell doesn't get any penalty either. So there's just multiple. And the annoying thing for the Giants is so many stick infractions we are coming up with, you know, lately. And lazy plays, tripping, sticks, interference plays, you know, slashing, hooking, all these things. That cross checks is the most annoying penalty in the book for me. Cross checking, there's just no need to do it. And
it's a frustration, you know, play, isn't it?
It's a frustration play. Yes, we were getting frustrated despite leading. That's just what worries me the most. You know, we were in a winning position. We almost tossed it away. You know, okay, it came up shorthanded, but that penalty has ultimately cost us because before Higgy it's Higgy because Higgy's serving the penalty for Rutherford, who's been thrown out of the game. Before Higgy and Benny can get back into the play, we're more or less facing a 5-on-3 there.
Yeah.
They pulled the goalie, got their extra man on because we're actually shorthanded. And our two guys have jumped back onto the ice and haven't made it back into play, and we've effectively given up a shorthanded goal, you know, or they've scored shorthanded. And, you know, discipline is key here. We should have seen that game out. Better game management, better personal discipline management.
Couple of stats as well. We've got Murphy started for the Belfast Giants, 29 shots, 26 saves. Fallon for the Stars, 37 shots, 34 saves, out shooting the Stars in their own barn. Mason was the healthy scratch. And Aaron, to take it all the way through overtime, just to grind out that win, you know, it's still 2 points is 2 points against the side and Dundee who shut out the Sheffield Steelers only a matter of weeks ago.
Yeah, and it's 2 points on the road. You know, I think we always talk about any points on the road are sort of bonus points, as it were. And it, you know, especially with being Dundee who aren't in our conference, and from that point of view, it helps as well. But yeah, you know, there's a bit of, the guys showed a bit of character in the game to sort of bounce back from a pretty deflating goal that they conceded right in the end, to battle through the overtime period, and then to go through, as you said, seven rounds of a shootout, which can be pretty, you have to say, whenever it got to that, I pretty much stopped paying attention because I just couldn't cope with watching a shootout. You know, and especially I was glad when I saw eventually that it went through seven rounds, because I don't know that my nerves could have taken seven rounds. But yeah, you know, it was two points on the board on the road, which were badly needed. You know, games like this against Dundee, with no offense to them whatsoever, for a team that wants to be up there at the end of the season, you know, yeah, you have to beat the teams like the likes of Dundee.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. We're going to come on to Sunday's game in a second, but that's something I was thinking earlier on. A lot of people were, you know, saying about the loss to the Sheffield Steelers and about how that's going to stop us from winning the league. I don't necessarily agree. I think you need to be picking up points against everybody, and you can afford one or two losses along the way. Anyway, before we get on to that game, I want to say that the highlights are available from Stars TV, and hand it over to Aaron, who wanted to make a little comment about Stars TV.
Yeah, no, you know, earlier on, I was going to be more of a rant, but, you know, I've had a bit of time to calm down, and I know the amount of work and effort. You know, I've seen the guys, Giants TV guys, that, you know, the amount of work they put to put these things together. But I clicked on to, you know, I didn't have time this week to get and sit and watch the game in full. And I clicked on the highlights today, thinking I'll just get a bit of a gist of it. And as soon as I hit play, it came up saying it was 28 minutes long. 28 minutes of highlights, you know, you may as well just show the entire game.
The thing about it was that, like you say, we're not running it down too much, but maybe a bit of positive feedback or a bit of constructive criticism. I don't think we need in the highlights, as much as I enjoyed the comment about Cez and his love for Joey Sides being thrown in, there was nothing on the highlights of what was going on the ice that warranted that to be thrown in. Neither the ask Sescon and what type of burger he would be if he was a burger. These are things that could be individual videos and shouldn't really be part of the highlights package.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's just, it's they want to get people watching them. And I think if you make them 28 minutes long, you know, people aren't necessarily going to have 28 minutes to sit and watch highlights. And if you have a 3-game weekend, there's an hour and a half of your day just watching highlights.
Any comment, Davey? We're not running them down because they are a lot of effort, right, would you say?
But you know, for me, Stars are one of the premier webcasts out there. Yes. They're good commentary, very good quality, pictures on the thing. And yeah, 28 minutes is a wee bit long, but they show multiple angles, they show multiple replays of the same incident, and I like that. But yeah, you could probably not have to show every penalty, but at the same time, there's 6 goals in the game, and there's a 7.
It did do a good job of showing the shootout, yeah.
7-round shootout, so you know that's going to take up a bit of time. But yeah, they do have, I assume they have a pile of interviews at the end of it as well. I haven't watched the highlights because I'm like you, Aaron. I've sat and watched the full game back, but that to be fair has taken me almost 3 days. So
the highlights.
Well, the highlights are available from Stars TV on YouTube. We'll tweet them up on @AVFTB. And unfortunately, we now have to move on to Sunday. The Belfast Giants travelled from Dundee, down the A1, down the M1, all the way to Sheffield, into the Sheffield Arena. But unfortunately for Derek Walser, once again, he still can't get that win in South Yorkshire. The Belfast Giants were subject to a 5-1 defeat to the Sheffield Steelers. The only goal from the Giants coming from Colin Shields, adding another one to that tally at the top of the all-time scores list. The Steelers' goals, Matteo Wag with a power play goal, Levi Nelson, Jesse Schultz with 2, one of those on the power play, and Ben O'Connor, who, with his dad, which I found odd, I watched some of the webcast, his dad was on the webcast as a co-commentator, and his dad kept referring to him as Ben O'Connor. I found that quite odd from Mike O'Connor. Anyway, Stephen Murphy started once again, 32 shots and 27 saves, and Irvin Mustakov's 40 shots and 39 saves. The Giants outshooting the Steelers in Sheffield Arena. Jan Schmeichel was your referee, and Adam Keefe was the healthy scratch. Bit of an ill-tempered affair, Davey, but let's come back to those statistics. 40 shots on Mustakov's and only one went by him.
Paddy, you might have to get your beep machine out here because this is a performance and a result more than a performance that's really pissed me off. Okay, we've given the first one up on the power play. You can't let Matthew Waugh stand in front of your net. Nope. That's where he makes his money. And we don't go out and block the shot on the penalty kill. We go half-heartedly towards it, and they get a shot in, and it's 1-0 all of a sudden. And then, you know, we at that stage, we are well in this game, and we have a goal disallowed that is a goal all day, every day.
100%.
It's a bad call from Schmeichel, but you've got to move on as well. You've got to take that sometimes in the chin. That's maybe 2-2 nights we should have had, but that's a different game at 1-1. And we were piling the pressure on. And at 1-1, you never know, that little mental block that we seem to have in Sheffield maybe doesn't come up. We can see the second goal, the third goal, and the fourth goal, all from individual mistakes of not clearing the puck. We have control of the puck in the zone all 3 times, chip it off the glass, get out, get a line change, whatever, reset, and 3 times we don't do it, and 3 times it's in the back of our net.
That's exactly what happened the last time around. That's exactly how we started to concede goals in Sheffield.
We've conceded so many goals this season from not clearing the blue zone. And a few times with the opportunity to go up the glass and we don't do it. And time again, we throw it up the centre of the ice, which is an even more dangerous play. But that's by the by. You know, this is what happened. And we're 3 or 4 goals down and it's game over. No matter what you do, you're not coming back from 4-0 down in the Sheffield Arena. And okay, we'll get the goal to break the goose egg on Mustakovs, who's really, really almost deserving. He obviously gave up one goal very, very late on against the Panthers the week before in a big blowout. We have an issue with Sheffield. It's something that it can't be avoided. You know, the discussion's there. It's not even an elephant in the room. It's, you know, statistically now, what are we, 8-9-1, something like that, you know, against them. In games that we should, if you put 40 shots on Irvin Mustakovs, you need to score more than one goal.
You need to be crashing in a bit more. There are amount of times that maybe we had an empty net where all we had to do is put a stick on the puck and put it in the back of the net. It happened
time and time again. Three completely open nets. Now, bad control, maybe just not 100% pass on the tape or whatever. But, you know, you have to take one, or, you know, take one of them, take two of them. You cannot give chance after chance to your opposition and not take your own chances. And this is the story of the last 24 months of this club. And we have talked about it ad infinitum on these podcasts as well. We are not a chance-taking organisation at the minute. And we have players paid to put the puck in the net who, over their careers, have, who aren't doing it. And, you know, what needs to change? Don't ask me that. You know, that I don't know. I don't know why it's not going in the net for us, but it hasn't for a long time.
Aaron, do you think this is this issue with Sheffield? Do you think this is players on players, or do you think this is Walser v. Thompson?
Oh, good question. Thanks for that. do you know what? If you sit and you look at the teams on paper, there's probably not a huge amount of difference. I think Tomo just, you know, you just got to look at Tomo. Tomo has done it with the Blaze in this league. He's been, he's been abroad to Sweden and had some success there. He's come back to Sheffield with a lot more resource than probably what he had in Coventry whenever he was putting together those teams. And he knows the league. You know, you talk about is it a Tomo v Walser thing. Last year, probably more so, because, you know, Tomo knew the league and he knew the style. Walser was learning it. This year, I think it's just it's one of those things. You see it in sport from time to time, no matter where you go, where teams just get on a run where they, you know, I think to look at one, the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think, went something like about 12 years without winning a game in Buffalo. You know, players changed, coaches changed, all sorts of things changed, but it just, the streak just kept going on. And unfortunately, it seems to be we're in one of those. I think it could very well go, if we can get that win, it could go the other way just as easily for 5-6 games afterwards. You know, to look at the bigger picture, you go into Sheffield, and we mentioned this with the Dundee game where you get 2 points on the road. You go into Sheffield, any point that you can get over there is a bonus. You know, absolutely a bonus. You know, you got to look at beating them in Belfast and then picking up the odd point over there to try and make things a bit more, you know, in your favour. But I think it was the manner, but, you know, a 5-0 trailing, a 5-0 with a second left, making a 5-1, a few seconds left, making a 5-1. You know, it's a bit of a message almost to be on the end of a score like that, and to have been beaten there twice, sort of fairly comfortably, is very disappointing.
Do you know, I don't want Paddy to get into the, go down the old Babcock route. You know, don't get too high with the highs, don't get too low with the lows. But you know, as a club, we have to accept that you're not going to win every single game.
Yeah.
But our consistency level is a big issue, where we don't know that we're, you know, in the season, I don't want to harp back to the 80 season, let's say, but per se, in that 80 season, we had a couple of bad losses near the start of the season, but there was no sense of, you know, throwing the baby out with the bathwater. But at the minute there is, we're a team and a club and an organisation and a fan base that, you look, when we had the 6-point weekend, we couldn't get a fan agenda question, we couldn't get anybody to interact with us because everything in the garden's rosy.
Yeah.
We get a great 2 points in Dundee, because Dundee is a hard place to go to. They've got good goaltending, they've got goal scorers, and we've said they come at you. Now, we should have closed that game out and won it in regulation, but we've come away and done the business. We've gone to Sheffield and we've been right in the game and we've capitulated. And that's what worries me. We know we as a team can go from being so dominant, and we are dominating on the shot count, we're dominating possession, but we're not putting the puck in the net. And that is a crazy statistic for us, because we've got James Demaree, we've got Mike Forney, we've got Colin Shields. Who else have we got up for, you know, front there that have goals in them through their career?
Yeah, Demaree.
And we're not getting goals out of them. So it's a conundrum, because Forney obviously had that season in Sheffield. We know what he can do.
Yeah.
And
we've seen what he can do.
At times this season we've shown glimpses, but like sort of over the last 10 games, I think he's maybe 2 goals in the last 10 games. And this, I'm not lumping everything on Mike Forney or James Demaree or any of them. This is a team game. But sometimes I think this team gets away from what Derek Walser would call the system.
Yeah.
And there's some people who are on their own page here. And, you know, that's what needs addressed. You know, how we get out of, we're not in a slump, But we are in a position that we are not playing to the ability of this roster.
I don't want to, like I said, I want to move on quick because there is a big talking point to come on to. I do take your point on the 80s season, and a lot of people harken back to that. I think that is another one of those seasons where the stars aligned, we didn't get any injuries, and we basically run roughshod over the league. Years like that don't happen. They don't come, they don't happen all the time. You have to work for them, you have to work hard for them sometimes. And I think
you've
it's
just,
unfair.
You've just hit the nail on the head there, Paddy. You have to work hard for them.
I think that this team has the ability to do something like that, but they have to work hard for it. And that's the frustration. That's the frustration for me. But anyway, listen, I want to move this along because there is a big talking point. In the second period, there was an incident at the, I think it was only about 10 seconds or a minute left in the second period. There was an incident behind the goal between Haggas for the Sheffield Steelers and David Rutherford. Subsequently, Debiens gets involved. But anyway, what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave it to Seth to give us the intro.
Dops. Dops. Dops.
Yep, because once again, Dops are involved. The incident took place and it was a check to the head from David Rutherford to Haggas. He was subject to an automatic review, and from that automatic review, he has received a 2-game suspension. I'm going to move to you first, Aaron. There is no real excuse for the hit that David Rutherford puts on Haggas.
No, there's not. And I think having, to be fair, the footage that I saw originally, it wasn't as conclusive as what I've seen since. And I think that's possibly true for a few people who've had made their points out there. And I think a lot of it was overshadowed as well by what happened afterwards with Rutherford, with him being, with one of the Steelers, one of Haggas' teammates coming in to stand up for him. And, Rutherford went down and ended up having to leave on stretcher and spend some time, I think, getting scans in hospital and stuff. I think that overshadowed it, but haven't seen it again since. I wonder if maybe two games is perhaps a little lighter than we might have expected.
I have to say I was surprised that it was 2 games, pleasantly surprised it was 2 games, let's be fair, because I did think there was something maybe a bit more substantial. We'll take the 2 games, we'll suck it up when we move on. As you say, the incident was a check to the head behind the net. Haggas went down and stayed down. Subsequently, he is not playing tonight against the Edinburgh Capitals in the Challenge Cup quarter final. He was seeing a few stars after that. He was treated for concussion. Likewise, when Debian came in to, let's say, stand up for his teammate, there was a bit of a falling over and Rutherford took an injury where he had to be stretchered off. Also, he was tweeting soon after saying, that he was feeling a little bit better. He has been scanned. We'll see how he is. Davey, 2 games. Now, is that fair? And what about the fact that Debian actually didn't get anything?
Right. We'll take this in several strands. One, over the last number of weeks and months, as we've been talking about Dops, I said when an incident involved the Belfast Giants player, I would analyse it on its merits. And yes, I think we've dodged the bullet here. I think David Rutherford has been lucky enough to come away with only 2 games. It's a naughty hit. It's a hit he doesn't need to make. And I said about, a selfish hit on the Saturday night in the Stars game. This could end up costing the team as well. We need to play short-bodied now. In Nottingham and in Manchester, which won't be an easy place to go. So there's players have to take responsibility for this, and as a club, you just take it on the chin. It's no pun intended. At the end of the day, Dops have said it's 2 games. That's what the tariff is. I think we've got away lucky enough. Debian obviously can't be reviewed, as it's not an incident that is reviewable by Dops. However, this the thing, you called it, I think Aaron called it as well, standing up for your teammate. It's not standing up for your teammate. It's taking retribution against someone who has hit your teammate. You know, you're not protecting your teammate who's on the ice by hitting somebody else in the head. David Rutherford's hospitalised in that incident by Debbie Ann. Now, on review of it, I don't think Dobbs would have particularly added anything else onto it, but this is the situation where Dobbs can't review these situations either. Debbie Ann has came in an incident nothing to do with him. He's got called for charging, which is a peculiar call for a start. But in that situation, his initial contact is to the head. He's put a guy in hospital and it's not reviewable. Now, I'm not asking for Debbie Ann to be suspended, but I am appealing that every game penalty should just be reviewed. It should be reviewed. There's not that many game penalties. We're not talking about dozens and dozens of game penalties per week. And this comes down to finance. It doesn't come down to player safety. And Dobbs are compromised, and it's unfortunate. But if you just go back to the incident, yes, I think that the incident is worthy of a ban.
There's plenty more to talk about Dobbs, so we'll take that and we'll move on. The highlights of that game are available if you want to watch them from Steelers TV, but they may end up pissing you off the same way they pissed off
you. You don't want to watch them.
watch them for the goal, for the kicked in goal.
Yeah, that I don't get that at all.
I strip it out and just tweet it up on AVF TV.
Yeah, let's do that. Okay, interview time. Let's head down to practice. We promised Simon Kitchen a signed picture of Joey Sides if he got us an interview with Derek Walser. So let's hear from the head coach.
Joined by Derek Walser Wednesday morning after practice. Derek, good result the weekend against Dundee with the shootout win and then heading down to Sheffield. But obviously you're made to work hard up in Scotland.
Yeah, Dundee's a good team. They got a really good goalie, and you know, we battled travel day. They played the night before. We came out with a real good start, and you know, sometimes you get that early start right away. You know, we got away from our game a little bit, and then the referee took control of the game in the second, where you sit in the box for a period. It's tough to win any game, and then Murph did his job. We found a way to get a goal, we get the tie, and then Murph did a great job in the shootout, and we found a way to get 2 points. And anytime you go on the road and get 2 points, it's a success.
And then obviously it was a difficult journey down to Sheffield, from what I'm led to believe, and skating into Sheffield and coming out in the wrong end of another defeat against the Steelers.
Yeah, you know, you got to look at the positive thing. We played there twice, and both times we could have won games. Take away the score, I know I thought we had more quality chances early on. We just didn't put the puck in the net, and that's the life of hockey. You know, we didn't put it in the net, and then they scored in their chances. And in the third, you know, we got away from our game. That's something that we got to start understanding. Like, there's a reason we're getting chances in the first two periods, and in the third, you know, you start taking gambles and risk, and we didn't need to take those gambles. We could have just kept playing the same way, and we didn't get any goals, and that's just the way it is. And they just found two goals where we started to try to cheat and try to create an odd man rush, and they capitalized on it.
And then obviously looking ahead to this weekend, we have Nottingham away and Manchester away. Two very good victories so far against the Nottingham Panthers in Nottingham, and then a team that you haven't faced this season in the Storm.
Yeah, you know, getting any points in Nottingham is usually, it's a tough task. So right now we got to go there and just play the same way and try to squeak out a win. Then you go to Manchester, it's a whole different type of game. It's a small rink. They're playing really well at home. You got to make sure that you're ready to go. And if we don't come out there ready and play simple, you know, it's a small burn. Things happen quick, so we got to be on our toes and ready to go.
We're standing here watching Vermont being put through their paces 5-on-5. You know, the NCAA back in Belfast this weekend, and you're obviously looking, you're down. You were here last year watching some of the practices, and you're here again after a hard practice yourself this morning.
Yeah, I think you, early on as a coach, you look and see what other teams are doing and see if you pick up anything, see if you're on the right path or find some new things you want to introduce, especially drills and practice, and seeing what these guys are doing. Just a complete buy-in and trying to figure out how they get this, and hopefully you get a chance to talk to a coach and ask them some simple questions and get some advice.
Derek, thanks very much for your time. Good luck this weekend.
Thank you very much.
Okay, time for the Around the League section. We've already had the jingle, but let's start with what was remaining from Dobbs. We've talked about the David Rutherford incident. I think Kitchy's still crying over it right now. But other incidents that were reviewed automatically, Yaroslav Hertl of the Edinburgh Capitals was assessed at 2+10 for a check from behind. That was automatically reviewed and there is no further action. The Coventry Blazers' Ross Venus was there was a request from the Fife Flyers to look into the incident involving him, and he's received a one-game ban. And also, the one we're going to focus on here is the Brayhead Clan's Corey Carrick was assessed a six-game suspension for an incident that took place in Altrincham, where not only did he bump into Tom Darnell, the referee, that subsequently got him a 10-minute misconduct. When linesman Chris Wells came in, Carrick grabbed him, shoved him, and has now been given a six-game suspension. I'll take each of your opinions individually, and I'll start with you, Mr. Kernaghan.
Yeah, well, you know, he can't touch an official. I have a feeling that Davey might make reference to the way the officials come in as well, possibly. Am I right, Davey?
Well, you get to me whenever it's my turn.
But, you know, and he's right, but, you know, you can't raise a hand, you know, in such a way to an official. And it harks back a bit to the Peacock incident last year, you know, where he struck an official as well after, you know, albeit possibly accidentally. And we discussed that in depth at the time. I think he got, I can't remember what his ban was. It a couple of games he got for that one? But I think a six-game ban just about sets out a bit of a, you know, enough to maybe put people off in the future.
David,
I see Purple Army podcast and a lot of Brayhead Clan fans not necessarily backing Coic, but asking why Bordalo earlier in the season, virtually identical instance. I think it's who wears 27 Hicks.
Yeah.
Escorting Bordalo off the ice and gets exactly the same. Gets a big shove in the chest. Get out of my way.
Yep, we spoke about this at the time.
Yeah, except Wales doesn't go. You know, if Wales goes flying backwards there, I've no doubt. I just think that Darnell's maybe slightly blindsided by it and doesn't see the full incident. If Darnell sees that, it's a match penalty there and then. You can't put your hands in the officials, just like Bordalo shouldn't put his hands in on the officials. And I would say that the Clan are in somewhat of a position of strength to appeal. Now, whether you want to go through that whole appeals process, obviously we've only seen, you know, appeals happen once with the incident down in Cardiff there, but, you know, they can take a precedent there and go, here's the footage of Patrick Bordalo refusing to leave the ice and shoving an official hard in the chest. Coic has done more or less the same thing. Both are exactly wrong. Bordalo should have had a six-game ban, but if he doesn't get anything, then I think the Clan are in a position where they say, well, you know, Seth's always want to say, you've got to compare incident with incident. And I suppose if you compare Fitzgerald hitting Stewart the other week, it's direct headshot, he's got a two-game ban. Rutherford, direct headshot, two-game ban. There's a level of consistency there. The trouble with the Bordalo and Carrick incidents is there is no consistency. One guy hasn't, it's not like Bordalo got a game or two or three, he got nothing.
Yes, but there's a reason for that. There's a reason. The reason for that was that the Coventry Blaze did not request anything against Bordalo, but in this case, the Manchester Storm did request against Carrick. Now, I do agree with you. I think we spoke about it at the time, the Bordalo incident, because I remember seeing it. It was all in that big melee that took place by the bench, and Bordalo pushes back, and he should have, you know, there should have been retribution for that. But there's precedent in this, of course, with regards to when we talked to Todd Kelman about the incident with Craig Peacock and Stephen Hogarth. So, obviously, the Manchester Storm looking to get retribution in regards to Carrick, and I think rightly so. Six games, fair enough. Remember what happened to Aaron Clark a couple of seasons ago when he lashed out. He hit the glass near Andy Carson in Sheffield, I think it was, and he got, was it six or eight games or something along those lines?
Can I ask you a question here? Did you bring this up with Coach whenever you had your interview with him?
I have asked him for a comment.
Just wondering, you know, we will hear that later
on in the show.
When Killer kind of said tongue-in-cheek about protecting the officials whenever he was trying to get Peacock suspended. He was trying to weaken the Belfast Giants, let's not kid her. Manchester Storm are sitting top of the conference. Are they just trying to weaken? Because, you know, does Coach feel the moral guardianship of the referees? This has to be taken on by the league. I'm tired of talking about Dobbs every week. Simon Kirkham has to be given a set of coconuts. to be allowed to do this because he's not protecting his linesman. It just is as simple as if an incident is brought to his attention by his referees or his linos that a referee or a lino has been struck by a player, Simon Kirkham has to be able to review that without somebody writing the league, paying £250 and asking for a review. It's a feckin' nonsense.
It's starting to get my nerves. Hold on, there's a secondary incident here, mate, that needs to be dealt with, and you brought it up earlier on in this show, and it's the four-man system. Because what you had was you've got Chris Wells coming out at speed, and now we remember last season talking about, you know, I think it was Daryl Lloyd, it was Mitch Ganzak getting in a bit of an incident with a linesman getting shoved by the linesman. But Chris Wells comes in at speed. He grabs Coick by the shirt. Coick shoves him. Coick's lucky that Wells was holding his shirt, because if he wasn't, yep, Wells would have went down and Coick would have been kicked from the game, because Darnell is skating to the scorer's box to give the penalties. Now, why on earth is Chris Wells not saying to Tom Darnell, he's just giving me a shove? Where's Lee Young? Is he not watching this either? Why is he not making a comment? Why is Coick allowed to remain in the game with these officials that have now been subsequently, by DOPS, the game's been re-refereed to show that they were, I don't want to use incompetent in this situation, but there was a reason why that they didn't, you know, the Coick wasn't kicked from the game. And it had a direct effect in this game, because Coick comes out of the box, he scores a goal, and the Brayhead clan win by the odd goal in nine. So, you know, this actual incident had a direct effect on the outcome of the game and the fact that the Manchester Storm did not get 2 points from the game. If you've got a four-man system, you've got another set of eyes, another referee on the ice who's able to deal with that player, and another person who can make a decision to kick him from the game. That is where our root cause of this. It isn't DOPS. DOPS have made the right decision here to give him a six-match suspension. The problem is communication amongst the officials and the fact that we need four men on the ice calling this game. And I agree with you. We've said this quite a bit. I'm just going to write down 40 on my pad here because it's off as well, because this isn't the first time it's happened. It's not the last time it's going to happen, and we're going to have it time and time and time again. And as fans, we know what should be happening. And obviously, there's a financial reason. Obviously, there's a reason with regards to resource and refereeing. But if we're having to pay £250 for these things to be reviewed, there's money slushing about. Why can't this be sorted out?
Paddy. Obviously, hockey brings out the passion in people in different ways. And you've Brayhead, we tweeted that incident up on Saturday night whenever we've seen it. And you've Brayhead fans coming on, back in Coick, saying it's all down to Wells and the way he's came in.
Ridiculous. Coick's
going towards Darnell, and Wells sort of just getting in between them. And like, he's grabbed him by the shirt. He hasn't forcibly grabbed him. He hasn't shoved him. He's just held on this shirt. Now, Brayhead fans are saying, you know, there was people there saying he deserved the slap or he deserved the punch.
That is a minority, I will say, but
I'm going somewhere with this. There is a referee is going to get hurt because these players are getting bigger and stronger and faster, and you know, some of the linesmen are getting smaller and skinnier, and God forbid a referee gets punched, or you know, that's a career finisher for a player. Who was it a few seasons ago came in? The Cardiff, was it? And he hit a ref. He didn't last too long. The country was... I didn't want to say Convoy in case of slandering somebody, but yeah, you know, there has been more incidents in the last 5 years of players striking officials than I can remember in the previous 15.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just my memory's getting worse. But
one as well, wasn't he?
What's that?
Eric Cairns had something similar, didn't he?
Cairns ended up getting... That was his last game in the country, wasn't it? But, it's the frustration levels with the inconsistency in refereeing down to not enough support on the ice. It's such a quick game now to be played on a, you know, 200 by 100 foot ice pad, and it's got one set of eyes that's allowed to make decisions. It's too hard. This is the elite league. This is the elite level of ice hockey in this country. And the officials need the support of the players. They need the support of the fans, and they need the support of their own organisation.
Yeah.
The Referees Association... And by effect, DOPS as the head of that, the head of refereeing, as the head of player safety and referee official safety, aren't supporting them.
Yeah.
There, it requires a team to ask a referee to review an incident where an official is struck. It's a nonsense.
I want to move it on, because this is something I'd love to say, well, we'll never talk about this again, but we'll probably talk about it next week, because it's just the ongoing...
We'll leave it next week. You can listen to it on the forecast next week.
If you have to have a look to see Twitter, if you don't know that, what that's about. Anyway, listen, let's have a look at some of the results from the weekend. And, Aaron, the Coventry Blaze, the team of Calder, Carlson, the team of Martin and Lehman, the team of Paul Thompson, you know, the great teams of the Blaze of the past, the Coventry Blaze are rock bottom of the Elite League and have just come out of Scotland with three losses to Dundee, Fife and Edinburgh. Can you explain that to me?
I can't. You know, it's funny, I think during the... You brought it up with me earlier about Thompson v. Walser, and I did a reflected back and thinking back to those Blaze teams that we competed with. And, you know, for a few years, it was between ourselves and the Blaze at the top of the table. And to see where they've gone to now... But it's not a recent, you know, I think this year is possibly the way things are going. Looks like it could well be the real scraping of the bottom of the barrel for them. Over the last few years, they've had, you know, times where they've had poor starts to seasons, but they've managed to scrape it together. And in fact, you know, 2 years ago, they were bottom of the league when they made a coaching change and actually managed to drag it through to a playoff title. Yeah, you know, you see sort of guys you know from Coventry, the likes of Stu Coles, who's been on the show, and his sort of, he's, you know, he's flabbergasted by it. So if guys that are watching them and commentating on it every week are struggling, I can't see what's going on over there and how they're going to get out of it.
Davey, you once, I don't know whether it still burns inside you, but you once had a real deep down hatred for the Coventry Blaze. So to see them rock bottom the Elite League bring you any sort of joy?
Yep. Want me to elaborate?
If you'd like to elaborate, yeah, by all means.
Not really. Look, every team, I hate virtually every team with the same venom because I love my club and I want to see us doing well. So it's irrelevant to me how other teams are going. I've no love for the Coventry Blaze, especially from, I suppose, what would you say, 04, 05, 06, that sort of period in their history and our history where there was a real grudge going on. And I, you know, 26th of October 2002, I can hold on to grudges. It's a Northern Irelandism, and no, I'll lose no sleep over it. In fact, maybe even crack a wee glass of champagne if they keep going bad.
Well, I'll stick with you, mate. Cardiff Devils, they're on a bit of a roll at the minute. And the fact that they are, 7 points clear at the top of the Elite League. They came back from 2 goals down against the Sheffield Steelers to win 4-2. They are a strong outfit at the minute.
Very well drilled, very good special teams, which you have to have in this league when there's such fine margins between winning games and losing games. You just look at our own special teams over the weekend, not good enough again. And, you know, we had chances on the power play, we had chances to look. Cardiff Devils are taking theirs. They're up at the top in the penalty kill standings, they're up at the top in the power play standings, and no surprise that they're riding high now. Of course, they've played more games again than I, you know, they're 30% into their league season here, and they're 7 points clear. They are going to take a lot of stopping, and, you know, as I said, they're a very well drilled team. They come with good systems, and their special teams are good, and, you know, we're at a turning point in this season. We're a long way back already. You know, you might say we're not really. We're only 9 points or whatever behind with a couple of games in hand. Our form, to me, doesn't dictate that we're going to be in a race here with Sheffield and Cardiff, who I see as the two teams that are going to walk on tall here towards the new year.
The Clan got a win in Manchester, and then they went into Cardiff and took a loss. I'm actually going to go quickly on here and just talk about look at the league table. As I said, the Cardiff Devils are riding high. They're in first place, 17 games played, 27 points in the bag. The Sheffield Steelers have played 4 games less. I'm not going to start into this whole thing. I think it's ridiculous, the fact that there's such uneven games played, but that's the Elite League. 13 games played, 20 points. Belfast, 15 games played and 19 points. And then Fife, Manchester, both 15 games played, 18 and 15 respectively. Nottingham, they're in the bottom half, 13 games played and 13 points scored. We'll come to them in a second, but they haven't scored a league point since the 8th of October. Dundee, Brayhead, Edinburgh, and then right at the bottom, Coventry Blaze, 16 games played, 11 points. This weekend, we're going to go straight on. You'll understand why, because this I think we're going quite ahead with this with the show. We've run it over quite a bit, and we still got an interview with Neil Russell to stick in. So people will understand that we need to move it on quickly. This weekend, the NCAA Friendship Four, of course, returns to the SSE Arena for its second year. Now, we've already previewed UMass, St. Lawrence and Vermont, so that only leaves one of the favourites for the tournament, Quinnipiac. So let's have Pink Puck's Rhonda McClure tell us all about them.
Quinnipiac University began to host a hockey team at the start of the 1975-76 season, beginning as a Division II team until 1998 when they elevated to Division I. They did not join the ECAC Hockey Conference until 2005 when Vermont University, who will also take to the ice in this year's Friendship Four, moved over to Hockey East. 2005 was also the year that Quinnipiac changed their name from the Braves to the Bobcats. The 2012-13 season saw the team in navy and gold take to the national stage as they won their first Cleary Cup, presented to the ECAC regular season champion, but then found they had received the number one overall seed in the 2013 NCAA Division I Men's Ice Hockey Tournament. They beat Canisius and Union to advance to the school's first Frozen Four appearance. In semifinal play, they beat St. Cloud State, moving on to the championship game, where they were shut out by their arch rival, the Yale Bulldogs. Quinnipiac earned a return trip to the Frozen Four championship game this past spring, where North Dakota denied them the victory. Rand Pecknold has entered his 23rd season as the Bobcats head coach. He is ranked 6th among active NCAA Division I coaches in career victories with a 446-264-63 record at the end of the 2015-16 season. The Bobcats' current record is 10-3-1 overall and 5-1-0 in their conference. That one conference loss was given to them by St. Lawrence University in a shutout back on November 5th. Undoubtedly, they will have a score to settle as they take to the ice against St. Lawrence during the semifinal game on Friday at SSE Arena. The university itself was founded in 1929 in reaction to the closing of Northeastern University's New Haven, Connecticut program at the beginning of the Great Depression. They opened under the name of the Connecticut College of Commerce in New Haven. They would change their name to Quinnipiac College in 1951 in honor of the Quinnipiac Indian tribe that used to inhabit the New Haven area. In 1966, they would relocate to their present campus in Hamden, Connecticut, and would change their name in 2000 to Quinnipiac University. The private university has an enrollment of 10,000 students. Many of their hockey alumni have gone on to play professional hockey in leagues including the ECHL and the AHL. 2 seasons ago saw 2 of their alums in the EIHL with the Coventry Blaze and the Edinburgh Capitals. Quinnipiac will certainly be a team to watch throughout the 2016 Friendship Four tournament.
Thanks very much to Rhonda. She's done quite a bit for us regards to these updates or these previews. And she's over this weekend. Looking forward to seeing her. Regards to the Friendship Four, of course, it all kicks off on Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock. The University of Massachusetts, UMass, take on the University of Vermont. And in the evening at 7:30, at the same time that the Belfast Giants face off against the Nottingham Panthers in Nottingham, St. Lawrence University will take on Quinnipiac. On Saturday, you'll have the third place game at 4:00, and the final for the Bell Putt will be at 7:30 on Saturday evening. Aaron, you know, it's a we've talked about it quite a bit over the months and whatever gone past, but the actual Friendship Four is upon us, and I, for one, it's glad to see it back.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's actually, to be honest, it's kind of snuck up a wee bit, I think, this year. Last year, with it being the first one, you know, it felt a bit more, how do you put this, a bit more, I suppose the newness of it just made it a bit more, I don't want to say exciting, that's maybe not the right word, but it just, this year, you know, I think because we've known about it since the tournament last year and whatever, it's not maybe quite been as fresh, but now that we've got into the week of it, and you know, you see the teams, the various teams have arrived, and they've been out with the schools, they've been practicing in the SSE arena. You know, it's starting to build, and I'm really looking forward to it. And you know, I'm quite looking forward to a wee half day booked on Friday to get out of work early and get down, and looking forward to, you know, the standard last year was unbelievable, and from what I've seen or from what I've read, these teams look like they're going to be even better again. You know, and to flew back with a few guys who played in it last year who are now playing and contributing in the NHL. So it'll be interesting from that point of view to see if there's anyone there this year who does the same towards the end of this season and next season.
We do. We saw Nick Lappin, who last season played on the ice at the SSE and now scoring goals for the New Jersey Devils this year. Davey, Aaron's brought it up there, the fact that we're seeing photographs being put out on the Twitter and whatever from the Belfast Giants and from at @friendship_4, their Twitter account, of these teams going out into the community, the STEM project, the relationship they have with the universities and the schools, drumming up support in these schools that we saw last season and all the coming out with their banners and stuff. There's so much more to it than the product on the ice.
Paddy, it's a real feather in the cap for the organisation and the country, the city. It's, you know, credit to Robert and Thorch and Johnny and Benny and all the boys that have worked so hard over the course of a year. And I don't mean to leave anybody out there. You know, there's probably loads more people than I know their names that have been involved in bringing this to Belfast, not least politicians and lobbyists right across the UK and indeed in America. And, you know, the sister city, we've now got the sister city of Boston with the sister city set up with Nashville. You know, good things will come out of this. And Robert's vision, I remember being with Robert right back at square one number of years ago, going, you know, let's get NCAA. Do you think it can work? And going from there, and what do you call him, Marty Walsh, the mayor of Boston, coming into the Belfast Giants locker room and announcing that there was going to be a bell pot, you know, in Belfast. And he got lambasted back in Boston. But hey, it happened, and it's happening again, and it's going to happen next year. And hold on to your pants, people, when you hear who's going to be coming. Now, that's not a sneak preview. I don't know, but I just know that if last year was good and this year's is better, next year's is going to be better again. And if you can get down, I would do anything to be able to be there. Well, not anything, because, you know, it's just down to finances, basically, why I can't be there this weekend. It was going to be a game day decision for me, and it's now into hundreds of pounds for flights. Thanks, Stelios. That's why Stelios has got so many airplanes, because he charges so much when you're trying to go last minute. It's one of those things, I just can't afford it this weekend. Love to be there. I'll be having a watch and brief. I'm going to be very jealous that someone else is going to be able to take that bell down to the ice for the presentation ceremony. Probably, genuinely, my proudest moment as being a Belfast Giants supporter was when, you know, Robert said this, "Davey, Paddy, look after that bell, make sure it gets the centre ice for the presentation." That was really nice, because that bell, people, not everybody will know, came from, you know, an East Belfast primary school, Templemore Avenue Primary School. When it was demolished, that bell was salvaged, and, you know, it means something to the city. It's a bit of old history, and it was a real proud moment for me. I'm disappointed I can't be there. I'm really, really proud of the organisation for putting this on again. I don't think I have seen very much on the Elite League website about it yet, unsurprisingly. But, you know, someday they'll embrace that what we're doing here isn't all about the Belfast Giants. It's about promoting healthy living. It's about promoting, as you say, STEM, and it's about doing things in the community. It's not just about hockey. And these young guys coming over, a lot of them for the first time leaving North America and getting to see a bit of Europe. Well, we're always going to be in Europe, but getting to see getting to see a wee bit of the world and enjoy themselves. I remember my nephew last year was at Dundonald Primary. Well, he's still Dundonald Primary, but he was there last year whenever one of the teams, I think it was UMass Lowell, actually came to Dundonald Primary, loyalists and all. And, you know, they he often talks about it, about the ice hockey, when are you going to take me back to the ice hockey, Davey, and all. And it's, you know, these guys come and leave an indelible ink, you know, an indelible print in Northern Ireland behind them, and some of them go on to the NHL, and you never know. Someday, one of them might just put on a Belfast Giants uniform.
You never know. I have to agree with you. The actual, I think, credit to the guys who organized it, whether it was Robert or whoever, in regards to that bell in Templemore Primary School, and the fact that when UMass Lowell won it and went out there and had the bell above their heads, you know, a call to arms is what I remember Robert describing it as, and it was a hell of a vision to see those guys do that. And no doubt we're in for more excitement. I believe that the games will be screened on Premier Sports. Murph over doing that, and the guys from 24/7 doing the coverage of that. So if you can't get down to it, and why wouldn't you? I think you're in for an absolute treat, an absolute display of hockey. Get yourselves down to the SSE Arena this weekend, Friday and Saturday, 4 o'clock and 7 o'clock, 7:30 on both days. Looking forward to it. Right, time for the final agenda. In association with Belfast Giants TV, what should we be talking about? We're going to make this quick, boys. So we'll take one each, and I'm going to start, and I'm going to ask a question from Thomas Brownlee, who asks quite simply, how bad a name is the Las Vegas Golden Knights? Aaron.
Do you know, it's funny, I was watching the Leafs game last night, and this all came through about the team name and all that kind of thing. It's not the Las Vegas Golden Knights, by the way.
It's just
Vegas Golden Knights. So they've dropped the Las, presumably because it sounds like loss or something like that. But it's pretty bad. And not only that, do you know, the worst thing about it was, I think I sent this through to you guys earlier, some of the PR where they mentioned the colors. And I'm actually just trying to find it. Here we go. Found it here. The team's colours reflect the community and the focus of the team. And, you know, just the steel grey represents strength and durability. Red is from the Vegas skyline. Black represents power and intensity. No, it doesn't. steel red and black just look pretty cool together.
Somebody got money for that.
Yeah, they just look pretty cool together.
David, any comment on that, or do you want to ask one of the TFAs?
No, I've no real comment to make on that. You know, there's plenty of teams with really rubbish names about the place, but
they're not even Bears.
Well, we'll get to those in a second.
Do you mind if I jump in there, Davey? One in from Stephen Thompson.
Go on.
at BFG14. It's quite long, but it's sort of prevalent to what we talked about earlier. Due to some inept refereeing on Saturday, can the league afford to suspend refs on bad performances given their short supply? If not, what should be the punishments to referees in our league for bad mistakes, i.e. Premier League refs being dropped to Division 1?
If I can answer that first, I think that's a tough one. You can't punish the referees, can you? We've already talked about, I've already had a big rant about the fact that, you know, we want a four-man system, but if we start to punish referees or cite referees for like incidents that they didn't do or things that they didn't do well, then we're going to just make the pot even even shallower. I think that the problem you have also is the relationship with the EIHA or with the EPIHL and the players that are coming up and down and the teams that are coming up and down or the referees that are coming up and down. And that doesn't really exist. The Premier League in hockey down there has got major troubles. If you want to hear about that, just tune into the Banners on the Wall podcast this week where three of the lads discuss the real problems that they have there. So you take the referee in out of it. We've got guys from Perring and all coming up, Steve Brown coming up. And the pool is, it's shallow with regards, so we can't really do anything. You just have to help them. It's not punishing them, it's aiding them. I think that's the thing we have to, you should have the carrot and not the stick in this respect.
Couldn't agree more. We need to support them, we need to empower them. And if that means getting another official on the ice, which we've discussed already in this podcast and in many others, and I know there's plenty of coaches around the league who would be of the same opinion, need to have extra sets of eyes in the ice there.
Davey, you got one before we move on?
Yeah, I'll take one from RJ Dawn 77, Ryan Donaldson. I think he does a bit of, he's a budding photographer, isn't he?
He is indeed, very good one.
Very, very good photographer. Indeed. Toothless stops, poor officiating, token playoffs, conflicts of interest galore. Does the EIHL need a shake-up at boardroom level and chairman level? Patrick.
Oh, you give me that one first. Short answer, yes. We need an individual. We need an independent chairman. We need a board that's got some teeth to actually start to take action. We've got, you know, this isn't the whole board, and obviously we know some of the people who are on the board, and we're about to hear from somebody who's on the board. But yes, it needs independent chairmanship, and it needs, but then we go back to the time when, like, sort of Eamon Convery was an independent chairman, and he was absolutely toothless. It was more or less a figurehead, and there was nothing really happened there. So it needs a shake up. It needs a bit more transparency, but are we ever going to get it? Let's be real.
I suppose it ultimately comes down to money, and I don't know how that the interviews are going for that commercial director's role.
Yeah, Davey, you wind me up. Go on. Aaron?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting times, and I think, I haven't listened, but I think, were you speaking with, Banners on the Wall about the sort of the state of the EPL at the minute?
There was a podcast out at the moment about the state of the EPL. It's very interesting, listen.
And, you know, I mean, to not go into it too deep, but, you know, the EPL, I think, is down, but there's 8 teams in it, and, you know.
Could be 4.
Manchester, the Blackpool Phoenix, potentially aren't going to make it to the end of the year. Bracknell struggled, and to get a team out this year, I think, are run by the fans. Telford are having money troubles.
Half a million in debt.
Yeah, which is, okay, so money troubles maybe understates it a bit. So you're potentially talking of the EPL of its 8 teams losing 3 teams. We know that, you know, there has been some movements by Ice Hockey UK to try and have different leagues under one umbrella. I think it has to happen, and I think we're at an interesting time. You know, the Elite League itself, in my opinion, is probably, in our time, as stable, you know, obviously as stable a league as there's been. You look at what's happened in the past with the ISL collapsing, the BNL collapsing. I think the next few years could be very interesting, and there's maybe the opportunity there to bring all those teams together under one umbrella and take things on from there.
Absolutely. Right. Well, do you want to comment on that, Davey?
No.
Okay, then let's move ahead. Thanks to everybody for your questions. We sort of breezed through them there, but this is quite a long show because we've had a hell of a lot to talk about. Keep them coming through the week at AVFTB on Twitter. Send them in by email. Give us some more emails. I was loving the emails. We didn't get any this week, maybe.
We did?
Didn't we?
We just got one there while we've been on the air, but we'll keep it for next week because it's a good question.
We'll keep that for next week then. I know I thought that maybe Hitchy had
we'll give him, but we better quickly give him a shout out there just to let him know that we've got it. And that's from James Conley. So James, it's a great question, and we will address it next week because I think we're probably going for a record length of time show here.
Yeah, we'll see how we get on. Right, let's go straight ahead. We're the Belfast Giants. Despite the fact that the Friendship Four is taking place this weekend in the SSE, that means we got time off last year, but the Elite League have not allowed us time off this year. The Belfast Giants will play this weekend on Friday and Saturday night. First up, Friday night, 7:30 p.m. in the Bear Pit. They will take on the Panthers? Nope, the Nottingham Bears in Elite League competition. They're just back from a weekend where they've qualified for the Super Final of the Continental Cup. Congratulations to them. However, in domestic competition, they are 3-7 from their last 10 domestic games. 7 straight domestic defeats. That stretches all the way back to the defeat they had against the Belfast Giants a couple of months ago. They haven't, as I said earlier, scored an Elite League point since the 8th of October, and we are now on the 23rd of November. However, having had such a successful weekend in Europe, have they turned a corner, David?
It's really hard to know, mate, you know, because, like, since they came back from Continental Cupbacks in the first time, they didn't exactly play very well. They've had to obviously play a bit of higher quality opposition this time round. So it remains to be seen. Like, the games between ourselves and Nottingham and Nottingham haven't been, like, one-sided affairs or anything. You know, they've been close games that we have managed to squeak out by sticking rigidly to our system. And, you know, I think we were down a couple of bodies the last time Higgy might have been out. And was that the time Higgy was suspended? And, you know, we've chipped it up. We've chipped it out of the glass. We talked earlier on about, you know, get caught in our own zone and costing us 3 or 4 goals against Sheffield last week. We just can't do that. You can't give really good teams leads at home. So we've got to make sure we're on top of Nottingham the whole time, try and get in there lead or keep it very close, get good goaltending. I think Whistle will be back next weekend, maybe not this weekend, so it'll be looking to Stephen Murphy to have an improved game from Sheffield the other night. And we just have to stick to the game plan. Everybody on the same page. Nobody can get off the team sheet here. Everybody has to buy into what Derek Walser wants them to. And when we do that, we're a hellish hard team to beat.
And, you know, two games at the NIC, two wins for the Belfast Giants, two games where the Nottingham Panthers fans moaned about how boring the game was. I couldn't care less. We've taken the wins. Do the Giants have to go in there and do exactly the same thing again?
They do indeed. You know, I'm just looking actually at the record the Panthers have got in the Continental Cup and the teams they played. And to be honest, having looked at it, with two teams out of four going through, I think they'd have been very disappointed if they hadn't gone through there. And I'm not sure. I suppose, you know, having lost so many games, I suppose it is just nice to get back to winning ways. But yeah, you know, I hope that that they go down to eight losses in a row. And the Giants, we have played well at times over, you know, on the road over the last lot of years. Actually, it's probably been a strength. And I would say, well, this is complete conjecture, but I'd say if you look back over maybe the last 3-4 years, our road record's probably the best in the league, or certainly up there. So, you know, last year the guys were about, and you know, some of them were jumping in and helping with media and all that kind of thing, and took, I think it maybe took their eye off the ball a wee bit for the game that we played on the Sunday. So I think it's a good thing that the guys are away. They're not bothered by the, you know, the NCAA, and they can concentrate on what they need to do over there.
Absolutely. Of course, there is no webcast of this. Keep your eye on at AVFTB. We'll point you in the direction of all the updates. 7:30 p.m. on Friday from the Bear Pit. And after that, they travel across the Pennines to just down the road from where I sit right now, to the Drizzle Dome in Altrincham, where they will take on the Manchester Beliebers. 7 p.m. on Saturday. It's the first match between these two sides this season. The Beliebers themselves are 5-5 from the last 10 domestic games. They had a bit of a bad run of form that was overturned at the weekend there in the game against the Fife Flyers, where they recorded their first shutout since they were brought back into existence last season. And earlier on today, I got to call up an old friend of the show, formerly of this parish, Television's Neil the Coach Russell. And I began by asking him, in what way, more than any other, have the Manchester Storm improved on last year?
Without doubt, we've got a lot more. I'm trying to find the right word, but I certainly think a lot more of a collective buy-in. Let's put it like that. With this team, you know, I think I might have mentioned it previously when we were chatting to you two guys. I mean, this team that we have here this season totally get what we're trying to build here with the Manchester Storm as a new club, as a new franchise to the Elite League. And they're very active in the community, very willing to be active in the community, which is something that Pash and I placed huge emphasis on over the course of the summer. It was, yes, of course, looking at hockey CVs and trying to get as good a player, as good a bang for your buck, as it were, for what you're paying out, but also very much looking at the human being and what he can offer to an organisation, and what he is willing to do above and beyond what ordinarily would be expected of a hockey player. And you know, we're very, very happy and content with the squad that we have got and the collective buy-in that we've got so far from the team. So I think that would be the one biggest difference, certainly from my side of things off the ice. You know, and that's certainly not in any way admonishing to last year's team. You know, I think there's an acceptance in all parts that, you know, last season was crazy putting it all together and what have you, and we didn't have community things, community initiatives and what have you set up. But this team are certainly, it's an older team, it's a bit more mature, and they almost don't need lead. You know, they're very proactive out there. So I think all in all, that would probably be the one major difference that I certainly see.
Of course, you had to do like 5 years' work in 30 minutes, and we heard about that last season. But given the amount of work that was put in, and the fact that you guys had to put a team onto the ice as quickly as possible, you went through, like you say, you went through the season as you did. Were there many seeds sown that you're actually really reaping the benefits of now, and what are they?
Yeah, well, I think the big thing from my perspective, and it's something that you know, took from the Belfast Giants, was being active and engaging in the community, and it was something that that I placed huge importance on. And as I say, last season we did sow those seeds. This season we're really kicking on that front, and we're really seeing the benefits of it. Of course, last season it was. Is getting the name out there, getting the contacts within the media with BBC Radio Manchester, with Granada TV and what have you, and trying to build up all those media contacts, get people interested in coming to watch the Manchester Storm, cover the Manchester Storm. And, you know, whilst I would still, of course, want more coverage than we get, I'm still happy with what we also receive. You know, you start to see a lot more press coverage now with the likes of the MEN, you know, reporters phoning me on a regular basis for interviews and what have you. And, you know, we have numerous different TV features. And, of course, obviously more recently the Bieber thing helped. But yeah. I think what we did last year was capture the imagination of people. And this season we're really kind of noticing an impact in the local community, in Aldringham itself, where people this time last year wouldn't have probably had a clue that who the Manchester Storm were, you know, what ice hockey was. And we're starting to see a lot more people coming from Aldringham, which is great. And it's something that credit to the guys, not just this season, but last year as well, for engaging on that side of things. And that for me is the key. And it's not rocket science. If you get your name out there and get your players out there, and just simple things, you know, our guys, wherever they go, you know, if I was to bump into guys in the city or bump into guys in the town or in Sale or Hale, they're always wearing Manchester Storm stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's important because it's brand recognition. And I think that would be the biggest thing. Community is a major focus with the Manchester Storm.
I have to say, obviously, we're living in Manchester. Initially, like last season, maybe I didn't see as much of that brand recognition around the town. But I think to back you up on your point, I think especially since the start of this season, I'm seeing buses going by with the branding on it. I'm seeing people in the centre of town still wearing it. So it's a real credit. So where do you go next? What's the next long term? You know, obviously the job never finishes, but you know, obviously the first season was trying to get yourself established. This season is starting to just try to work on that. Where do you go from here?
Well, first and foremost, I would love to be able to build my office. first and foremost, and I say that in a serious way, from the point of view that, you know, I look at the potential of the Manchester Storm and I think genuinely it's massive. I really do. And, you know, there are certain areas that I think we can be better at. But I think part of that would be a resource thing as well. Because there literally are, you speak to Thorch, you speak to other general managers or what have you across the elite league, they'll tell you the same thing. You know, it's, your hours get taken up very, very quickly in the day. And I think if I'm able to speak to my ownership at the end of the season and able to extend that office, I think, you know, we could certainly push a lot harder on the commercial side of things. I think we could still do even more than we already do out in the community, and engage even further. And, you know, to fill 2,500 seats inside the Storm shelter, I think it genuinely is an achievable target. I think, you know, I look at us now and think, you know, we're probably bringing in 1,500 people a week on average now, which is great. And whenever you think about it, we're what, 45-50 games into a franchise, and that's the way we look at it. And so for us to have done that in such a short space of time is in many ways is fantastic. But me being me, I want those extra 500-750 seats filled every single week. And that's obviously the long-term ambition, and it's just to kind of build up more and more contacts, Paddy, and on the media side of things to continue to drive the club. And I always listen, this is sport as well, it's professional sport, and winning helps massively. And it's something I'm sure Pash will mention to you, and I'm sure he's mentioned to you in private as well. We've placed big importance on our home form this season because a winning team helps with bums on seats as well. It gets people talking.
Yeah.
And, you know, so far so good in many regards. I mean, we've lost 3 regulation games at home this season, all 3 to the Brayhead Clan, which has been very disappointing. We've picked up points in all the other games, either the full 2 points or 1 point. But it's something we've placed big importance on.
Well, you know, that's obviously what's happening off there. Let's have a quick look on the ice. Quite a few changes on the ice defensively, and well, most notably offensively. And a lot, they say, a lot of leaders out there as well, a lot of big names, and a lot of guys with a lot of college experience, NCAA experience, guys who are maybe looking to get that next step. What sort of attitude did you go out into the market with?
Well, yeah, obviously I hand pass his budget, his weekly budget to spend on players, and you know, it's up to him as to how he wants to kind of spend that. Obviously, with bringing on board the three MBAs this year was massively advantageous for us to kind of spread that weekly budget out. And you know, certainly from our side of things, you know, we wanted that mixture this year of experience intertwined with the younger guys. And we, I mean, again, honestly, likes of Cody Cartier, Connor Varley, Jack Prince, these guys are all straight out of their universities and what have you, and they have been absolutely exceptional. You'll see Connor Varley, I know you've seen him a couple of times this season, young defenseman straight out of Penn State University. Honestly, you would struggle to find a more consummate professional already. He just soaks up everything. And you know, we wanted that kind of youth. We wanted younger guys who were very keen to, you know, come in and, for want of a better term, use us. To kind of springboard their career, if that's where they wanted to go, move on into Europe or move back home to the coast or the American League, whatever it may well be, but use us as their first year as a professional. And we have been massively, massively impressed with those guys. And, you know, they've soaked it up, as I say, like Connor Varley with Trevor Johnson on the back end. Yeah. You know, Trevor Johnson is a supreme leader for us, you know, just very cool, calm, collected, but you know, always over having a word with his D and what have you. And you know, I look at Jack Prince, I look at Cody Cartier as well, two young forwards, and they're just workhorses, Paddy. And whenever you intertwine that with the likes of Darren Dzinski, Mark Heatley, guys who have been round the block, played in the American League, played in the DEL, and what have you. You know, it's a good recipe for us, and it's worked out really well so far.
That's a good balance to have. Then what about this weekend? Then it's the first matchup between the Storm and the Giants, of course, as I said. It's actually the first of five over the next 4 weeks. Now, you guys have had a bit of a bad run, which you overturned in the game at the weekend. Your first shutout in the new Storm, let's put it that way, in the two seasons that you've been around. So trying to turn that corner. If I know you anyway, mate, that you know you've got an eye on the Belfast Giants, so you know how they're playing. What are you expecting from this weekend or this series? I guess
I hate these games with a passion. I hate them.
Well, to be fair, they are, you know, between the Storm and the Giants, we play each other the least out of all the games and all the matchups, so you don't get them that come around that often.
Yeah, well, it's now going to be five games this season, but. It's going to be our six games
this season, five games in the next 4 weeks.
Absolutely. And I honestly think it has the ability to be a really good game of hockey. I mean, last season when Belfast came into the Storm shelter, I mean, you were at all the games. I thought Belfast were absolutely superb in the smaller ice pad last year. Absolutely superb. So it's going to be interesting to see the way in which the two teams match up on Saturday. I mean, we're definitely bigger. We're definitely more physical than we were last year. Certainly won't be intimidated by a few of the Giants' bigger guys. Now, obviously, we're missing two of our bigger guys and Patrick Valcak and Eric Nielsen out of the lineup, but we still have a few guys there who aren't afraid to play that physical game as well. So I think that's one difference that certainly any of the remaining Belfast Giants players from last year who are still playing with the club, they'll notice a big difference whenever they come in on Saturday evening and over the course of this series of five games. You're right. I mean, obviously, I keep a keen eye on the Giants and watch the webcast when I can. I mean, I think Belfast have got a very good team this year. I really like the looks of that Saviano guy. I think he's a cracking hockey player. Mm-hmm. I think Murph, in fairness to him, has taken quite a bit of flack at the start of the season. I think he's been superb in fairness to him over the last few weeks. And you know, I'm not sure who's going to get the nod on Saturday evening, but whether it be Murphy or Whistle. But I think it's going to be one of those games. You know yourself as well, Paddy, in the Storm shelter, it's a smaller ice pad. You know, things happen a lot quicker. Shots on goal happen a lot more often. And I think it has a think it has the ability over the next few weeks if both teams can get fully, if we can get fully healthy and what have you, I think we can really push the Belfast Giants.
I've got three things written down here on my pad. I just want to wrap up very quickly with, first of all, webcast. You've got a webcast for this weekend and you finally got it in, but you're not commentating it.
Well,
that was your stick.
Good evening, hockey fans.
That's it. The big man from Premier Sports.
Seth has told me that he may be running about 15 to 20 minutes late. I have tried everybody. I've tried Owen Bradley. I've tried Chris Ellis. I've tried everybody because I do not want to do it. But it looks like I might have to step in, and I really don't want to do it on our match night.
Jackie Moon.
Exactly. But I might have to step in for 15, 20 minutes, which will be quite strange, commentating on a Belfast Giants game for 15, 20 minutes. But after all the years doing it with Sizz and Murph and what have you back home. But yeah, we've got the webcast up and running. Trialed it over the last few weeks, worked out very well for us. And yeah, I think it's something that we're definitely going to do long term. May still be selective. I mean, still need to sit down with ownership and discuss it overall and kind of see patterns and what have you. But it's something certainly for the Belfast games. I'll be very surprised if we're not doing webcasts for all the Belfast games. Let's put it like that.
The second to last question I was going to ask you is about Eric Nielsen, who we did see a very serious injury to him, especially in contact with his eye. It didn't look good, mate. How is he?
Mate, that was one of the scariest things I've ever been involved in. I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, I saw the incident, but I didn't actually see the puck going up into Nealer's eye. But I saw the aftermath of it straight away, and he came skating off, and the fear in the guy. I mean, anyone that hasn't met or seen Eric Nielsen, I mean, he's 6'3", built like a brick outhouse, tough as they come. And the fear in that guy's face. And he said to me like a day or two later, he thought his eyeball was literally out. He thought the way in which it felt, he had no eyeball. So we had to reassure him along with the medical staff and what have you. Listen, you're okay. Your eye is still there, but he couldn't see a thing at the time, which obviously worried him greatly. He had a huge gash underneath his eye, which had to get stitched up. And, you know, he was frenetic about it, and you know, it was very, very scary, and got him down to the eye hospital the following morning, and he's got three tears on the retina, which is obviously not great at all. Had laser eye surgery, went back again yesterday or the day before to the eye hospital for a follow up on that. And, you know, they're saying to him, you know, it'll be another two to three weeks, which is, again, from our perspective, not ideal. But, you know, I mean, listen, hockey goes out the window whenever it's your player's health and something so serious. And, you know, he hasn't been well along with it. He won't mind me saying that. I'm sure, I mean, in the last kind of week as well, suffer quite a bit with sickness and what have you. So, you know, the doctors are kind of monitoring him all the time, and probably a post-concussion there as well, Paddy. You know, which is not great. And, you know, thankfully he lives with Pash, so Pash is able to keep a good eye on him on a day-by-day basis. But, yeah, certainly something that I never, ever want to see again. Let's put it like that. But the big guy's a warrior, and he poked his head into the office yesterday and said that he hopes to get back sooner rather than later. But, as I say, we'll take the medical advice and all that.
Yeah, I think, well, we said it at the time, and we'll say it again now. You never want to see that happen to any player, and we do wish him well, especially considering we know only too well your respect for the likes of Paxton Schulte and Adam Keefe and that. And it looks like in Eric Nielsen, you found just that player for the Manchester Storm, not just with what he does on the ice, but a phenomenal amount of work he appears to do off the ice. So, you know, it's something you don't want to see happen to any player, but specifically in a guy that seems to be as good as he is.
Well, one of the best human beings you'll ever meet in all your life is Eric Nielsen. And you're right. I mean, we saw it firsthand in Belfast with the likes of Packer and obviously still to this day with the likes of Kiefer. The work that these guys do in the community, how good they are with the fans, how willing they are to engage the fans. And Nielsen's that guy for us, a huge, huge personality. One of those guys is just... he'll just go above and beyond for the organization. Never says no. will always, first hand up for any community events and what have you. And he's been superb for us so far. And, you know, we miss him. You know, Neil Elizabeth, first one to tell you as well, he's not going to light up the lamp 20, 25 times this season, but he plays a role for us. He's a great leader, great communicator. The guy, each and every single one of those players respect him massively. He goes out, plays a tough game, not afraid to drop the gloves. And as I say, off the ice, just an absolute gem. So, yeah, obviously we wish him a speedy recovery and got his thoughts or his health at the forefront of all of our minds.
Absolutely. And one last thing, I wouldn't be doing this job properly, mate, if I didn't ask you for a comment on the 6-game ban to Corey Cowick. Obviously, that incident took place on the ice, your own ice in Altrincham, had an effect on your game. He subsequently be given that 6-game suspension for the incident with Chris Wells. What are your thoughts?
I thought, I did say on the webcast, whenever I was speaking to Seth at the end of the first period, I thought he was a very lucky boy still to be on the ice, to be honest with you. Gops have obviously reviewed the tape and decided that it's worthy of 6 games. Hard to disagree. I think if you were to speak privately, maybe to the likes of Finner or maybe even Gareth Chambers, I'm sure there probably wouldn't be too much disagreement from them either. But I also think, you know, you look across different incidents that have occurred throughout the course of this season and what have you. And I think the league and the DOP system needs to start helping itself as well to a certain extent, Paddy. And, you know, there probably have been some other incidents that should have been penalised that haven't been. And partly, as I say, that's maybe down to the league setup with DOPS, but also maybe DOPS in itself as well. So it's something that we discussed last week at the Elite League board meeting. I think there's a general sense of opinion that certain things need to change and probably will change moving forward. And that's something that the Elite League need to address sooner rather than later.
Well, mate, always a pleasure to chat with you. Obviously, this game is the first of the, say, 5, and you don't look forward to them. But what's your shout for the weekend then? Give us a prediction.
Oh, prediction. A Saturday night home storm shelter, 7 p.m. face-off. I'm going with a 3-2 Manchester Storm victory.
Nah, overtime. Your team are actually going to win in overtime. You're going to actually go beyond the 60 minutes and take the points.
We're going to break the duck this weekend. 3-2 overtime Storm prediction.
Well, mate, thanks very much for joining us.
Cheers, Stormy P.
Thanks very much. And it's not Stormy P. You know better than that. Aaron, I'll start with you this time, the Manchester's Beliebers. A much changed outfit and pretty dangerous on small ice.
Yeah, you know, even last year, I remember there was one game in particular where I think we got to go right towards the end to squeak a win. They've improved great. You know, they've brought in some very good players and they've built on what they did last year. And it's a game where, you know, obviously we've got to focus on Friday, first of all, but it's a game where we can't afford to take our eye off the ball at all. We need to get in there and jump on the Storm from the start. And really, if we talked about it earlier and I've said, you know, points on the road are a bonus, but points in the likes of Manchester are an absolute necessity.
Davey, as Coach said at the back end of his interview there, that the fact that always got trying to give Belfast Giants points, you know, he says he hopes it goes to overtime and that the Storm will take it in overtime. Of course, this season the Storm have not been able to take any have not been able to win the game when the games went past 60 minutes. Your thoughts on what will take place at the Drizzle Dome this Saturday night?
Aaron's right there. The first time we went there last season, well, I think it ended up a shootout win. Was that the game?
Yeah.
I think it was a shootout. It wasn't overtime. Well, it was overtime, but then it went to shootout. We've won obviously 2-1. The other performances at the Drizzle Dome, as you like to call it, over the rest of the season were a bit more clear cut. You know, I think there were 4, 5, 6 goal wins in them. Storm obviously replying with maybe a couple on each occasion, but you know, I think that first time we went in there was a bit of a culture shock for some of our guys going back into, you know, a cold barn, a smaller rink, and just completely different from their usual surroundings. So we've got a couple of new guys in that need to adapt and adapt very quickly. Hopefully our guys will be letting them know what it's going to be like when they get there, and Storm will be all over us, make no doubt about that. You know, the coach and Pash we'll have them, letting them know how to get in our faces. You know, if anybody knows what how to get at a Belfast team, it's going to be Coach, because, but I don't buy that. That, you know, I think secretly still the coach will take 2 points for Belfast on Saturday night.
The game will be webcast, as we said on the interview there. You may even hear from television's Neil and Coach Russell back behind the mic, but keep an eye on at AVFTB. We'll give you the link to Storm TV. That is Saturday, 7 p.m. from the Drizzle Dome. The Giants taking on the Belabours. Any other business, gentlemen? I'll start with you, Aaron.
Yeah, I'm trying to find this moving number stuff.
I'll start with you, Davey.
Yes, Paddy, I have a couple of things. First, I'll go with one and then you can come back, Aaron, and I'll finish. So the Junior Belfast Giants are having a quiz night on Monday the 20th of November in the Clayton Hotel, and they're going to have some of the Belfast Giants players there making up three of the teams on the night. There's going to be a meet and greet opportunity, get some autographs if you want. Under 18s have to be out by 9 p.m. so if you have no ID, you're going home early. But you know, teams of 6 minimum, 8 maximum, email Jenny at juniorbelfastgiants.com to enter. The doors open at 7, the quiz at 8. It's £5 per person. June Boyd does so much hard work for those Junior Belfast Giants. Support her if you can, support the club if you can, because these are the future.
Yep, this is part of our club, the Junior Belfast Giants, and that's well worth supporting that. So get down there if you can. Mr. Kernan?
Yeah, I mean, the Giants, once again, are doing some of them are making themselves look very, very silly by growing little things on their upper lips. So Movember has come around again, and the guys are getting in, like some Matt Toe and Boxy and so on are trying to grow some kind of moustache and trim it to make themselves look like they're from the 1950s or something like that. But yeah, the guys, they've got a website set up, a Mobro website, which you can get to. I think it's mobro.co/BelfastGiants2. If you can get on there, you can donate, and the money all goes to sort of men's it's testicular cancer and prostate cancer, and I think it also looks at mental health as well this year.
Yes, there was a fantastic video done by the guys at Belfast Giants TV. We'll tweet that up when this show goes out. But it's the guy sitting around in one of the barber shops in Hollywood, I believe it is, just talking about how mental health and like so suicide and things like that have affected them, and how it's so important to basically, you know, to be aware of this and try to help people who are afflicted in that way. It's a fantastic, fantastic charity to be involved in. It's a brilliant video. It really is quite poignant. So I really encourage you, if you haven't seen it, just have a watch and see. I think Mike Forney talks really well. It just really is quite poignant, quite excellent. David, you said you'd one more?
Yes, Sunday night in Sheffield. Obviously, David Rutherford was hurt in the incident with Debian. You never take a chance with someone's neck, spine, all that sort of thing. And apparently the treatment from the medical staff in the Sheffield Arena, the Red Cross or whoever it was that came onto the ice and treated Rudy there before he had to be taken to hospital for scans, was 110%. You know, absolute special people that do that job. And credit to them, credit to Sheffield Steelers for having them in place. But really, really top drawer treatment they got at the rink. And hopefully that mitigates any potential injury or longevity to any injury may have been. You know, the first responders are the most important people whenever you've injuries, the necks and things like that. So credit to them and thanks from all the Belfast Giants.
Absolutely. It's a fast physical sport and things are going to happen. It's these guys who have to come onto the ice and, like you say, be the first responders. They may have to deal with some pretty nasty stuff, and a credit to them from all of us at the Belfast Giants. And on that, time to wind up what is a pretty, thanks for sticking with us if you're still here, a pretty long show. Friendship 4 this weekend at the SSE Arena, face off at 4 p.m. on Friday for UMass against Vermont, and 7:30 on Friday for St. Lawrence against Quinnipiac. Meanwhile, away from home, we take on the Nottingham Panthers on Friday night, 7:30 p.m. Keep an eye on at AVFTB for updates. And on Saturday, you've got the Friendship for third place and final at 4 at 7:30, but also the game at the Drizzle Dome. If you're not going to be over in Altrium in deepest, darkest Cheshire for that game, then you can get it on Storm TV. We'll be tweeting up details on that. Thanks very much to you, gents. Davey, I might be seeing you this weekend.
You never know, Paddy. Somewhere along the line, our paths may cross.
And Aaron, I'll see you on Friday.
yes, looking forward to it. Looking forward to catching up and actually speaking to you face-to-face rather than via Skype.
And thanks to Sammy Kitchen for the interview with Derek Walser, all you guys for your TFAs, to Neil Russell, and thanks very much to all you people out there for listening. Wherever you are this weekend, we hope you enjoy your hockey, and we'll catch you here next time on A View from the Bridge.